All right. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Live in the studio tonight, we have Bryce Abel. And I've got his new book. It's called Once There Was a Way. And it's What If the Beatles Stayed Together? And of course, we're going to be discussing this. And because we have open lines and this is Coast to Coast AM, it's about you and it's about the Coast audience. So we'll get to all of that in just a bit. By the way, China, we talked about this last night on the show. I need to drive this home. China is racing to become a major space superpower and could be the first nation to make alien contact. Now, they are building and getting ready to bring online the world's largest radio dish, which can detect signals not only from the deepest depths of space, but they're going to do it, check this out, with a 500-meter aperture spherical telescope. It's twice the size of Arecibo in Puerto Rico. China's going to beat us to the punch. Think about that. Yeah, they just may do it. Well, we're going to talk to Bryce about that. This is Coast to Coast AM, and all of your phone calls are next. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Live in the studio tonight, Bryce Zabel. And Bryce, I've got a full rack of phone calls in front of me. You want to take some calls?
Sure do, although I want to compliment you on your music first. That wakes me up, that rock and rolls. That's great stuff.
Man, I spend a lot of time putting together the bumper music, and I don't wing it. It's done with thought.
And it sure is, and it's done with energy.
Yeah, thank you for that. Not too many people notice that, but yeah, thank you. I'm serious, too. I spend a lot of time.
I would. I mean, it's radio. We love music.
It drives my wife crazy. She, you know, she thinks I'm in there having fun. I'm pouring over this. Yes. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go. Wild card, Frank in Inglewood, Colorado. Frank, you're up first on Coast. Welcome.
Thank you. This is the best radio show in the world.
Thank you, Frank.
I don't know how to explain this because it's pretty messy, but I met this guy a long time ago, and we became friends. And then one time we started communicating when we were, you know, miles apart. And then we got together, and he told me that he was an alien from another planet, and they came here to help us evolve and to prevent us from destroying ourselves with nuclear weapons. And I, you know, I looked at him like he was crazy. And then all of a sudden he literally, did just like a shape shift. His eyes got really big and it stunned me so much. I just turned away. Then I looked back at him and he looked normal. Then all of a sudden his eyes got real big and he could literally, and then he could communicate with me and you know, just subconsciously or consciously or something. I couldn't understand it, but we got in this conversation and he says that he told me the planet that he was from, but I can't remember what it was. But he was from this planet. They came here to keep us from destroying ourselves and helping us because we were destroying the environment. And he said, but they're only limited to what they could do. And all of life is evolving. And so,
what year was this, Frank?
Oh, this was a long time ago. I'd say it was in the late 70s.
Late 70s. And I wanted to ask you, because as I was listening to you, I couldn't help but think, were you a Beatles fan?
Well, yeah, sort of. Everybody was. You
That's
know?
Right. And yes. What do you think? What if the Beatles would have stayed together?
Well, I don't know anything about that. I know some of my fans were Elvis Presley.
Right.
You know, because they could somehow reach your heart, and your heart and your integrity has more energy than you know, gold and gossip and gab. So if you're coming from your heart, I mean, your heart has thousands of times more energy than your mind, and we're all programmed to be in fear and scarcity. And
Well, the reason why I brought that up, Frank, is your friend who could shapeshift.
Yes.
Did you guys listen to music together?
Well, I didn't know him that long. You know, he was a normal guy, looked normal, had a family, a couple of little kids, and he was just a normal guy.
Right.
But all of a sudden, we got in this discussion, and his eyes got real big, like about the size of a half a dollar. I mean, huge. And I couldn't, and it shocked me, and I turned away, and I couldn't, you know, it's just like, I didn't know what was going on. I looked back at him. He looked normal. Then his eyes got real big. But they looked real angelic, you know, like
right.
loving, you know.
Right.
And so this happened three times. And then I asked him, you know, what the heck is going on? And he told me that he was not sure, other than he was here from another planet, and they were here to help us. Or basically prevent us from killing ourselves with uranium, and they were monitoring like animals, you know, and our environment to make sure that the uranium didn't get too high,
right,
and that we didn't bomb each other, or
right,
in other words, they could prevent us from nuking each other.
Yeah, and you know, and Frank, what is interesting here, and Bryce, is that this seems to be, and thank you for the phone call, Frank, that this seems to be the message over and over and over. Millions of people that have had this experience can't all be crazy, can they?
Well, they could, but I don't think they are. We do get that report over and over. Part of it could be that's actually what's being said to us. I guess the other part could be we want to hear that, and somehow that's part of what we think this phenomenon is, and maybe it's something different. It's hard to say. I mean, we just don't have the facts yet on that. We have a lot of anecdotal evidence. We talked about Tom DeLong earlier. He obviously thinks it's not so angelic. He thinks that there's some kind of evil purpose involved here. I don't think we have that information yet.
Now, you just wrote this book about the Beatles.
Yeah.
Now, this is a great segue.
Yeah.
One of the great UFO sightings ever.
John Lennon.
John Lennon.
Yeah.
In New York City.
Yeah.
And did you address that in the book?
I didn't make a big deal about it because I've addressed it so much, and I've addressed it in After Disclosure, and
right.
I've talked about it a lot. For your listeners, in 1974, when John Lennon had moved back to New York City, and he was living with May Pang, who was his girlfriend at the time and who had been an assistant to John and Yoko, they saw close up, apparently, a UFO. He talked about it in detail. He was on media, and you can probably go hear what he had to say right now. He made no bones about it. Now, part of the problem, and he has stated a couple of things that are just great quotes about UFOs, about how it would change everything, and he's totally right. I mean, that's what I think. Interestingly enough, though, his sighting didn't seem to gain a lot of traction because a couple of things. First, I think he was naked when he saw the UFO,
right.
So that kind of, you know, made for people. Frankly, I think naked people have every right to see a UFO just as much as a fully clothed person, but that tended to feed a narrative about him being unserious. And then, of course, he had the drug history. So
that's right.
In terms of being the world's best witness, probably not, although, you know, I think he saw something because May Pang also saw it, and the only thing about it is I haven't seen any testimony from other people that lots of other people saw it. But again, we get that from this phenomenon a lot, where somebody may see something And several people may see it, but other people in the same area don't see it.
So, now, you live in the Valley with me, right? Okay.
Well, we're not roommates, just so everyone knows.
Well, we will be after this show, though, apparently.
We're taking the Odd Couple on the road.
Yes, we are. It is this. The Valley is full of population is over a million people. And it's probably a higher number than that. But it is densely populated. There are no trees left. It's all concrete and apartment buildings. And now imagine this. When you're talking about John Lennon and No Other Witnesses, my wife and I, at 10:30 at night, 10:24 at night, are coming down Latuna Canyon Road into the Valley, which turns into Roscoe Boulevard, as everybody knows, major thoroughfare through the mountains. We're coming down, getting ready to touch into the Valley, and I look straight out. My wife looks up through the sunroof in the car and says, "What the bleep is that?" And as I start to react, remember, I'm on a road and I'm driving at night, so I just can't take my eyes off the road. But at that instant, I see, come straight down through the center of the windshield, a white glowing ball, bright, streaked down. It lasts for about a second and crashed into downtown Van Nuys. I thought it was Armageddon. I was waiting for downtown Van Nuys to ignite and blow up. That's what I saw. I call MUFON. Now, let me just jump ahead. I reported the incident, and I talked to MUFON. We get home, nothing on the news. Nothing. It's impossible. Nothing in the news. Nothing on the internet. Nothing the next day. Nothing in the LA Times. Nothing. I checked the media for a week straight. Nothing reporting this big ball of light that landed, crashed in downtown Van Nuys by the courthouse. How is that possible?
It doesn't make sense. These sightings are so common. What you just said, though, reminded me of something. I told you earlier that because I've been sort of associated with the whole UFO thing because of some of the film and television product I've been involved with, people feel free to tell me their stories. Even my plumber, who was working on our plumbing, and said, "So you did that show?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "You know, I haven't really ever told anybody about this." And this is apropos of what you were just saying. When he was like 12 years old, he was playing at recess with hundreds of other kids in L.A. down at a school in Wilshire, in the Wilshire area. And they all saw, including the teachers, a UFO at, hovering close enough, I don't know the distance, but close enough that everybody could see that it had structure and it wasn't a light. It was a physical craft and it was hovering. And they all looked at it for a long period of time. And then everybody went back in when it flew off. Everybody went back in. He went home that night and told his parents about it. And his parents, instead of being intellectually curious about this thing that happened, said, "Well, don't talk to anybody about it." And he said, "Well, you know, it'll be in the papers, of course, right?" Well, the next day comes. Of course, it's not in the papers, and nobody ever talked about it. And his parents said, "You just can't tell anybody about this, because if you do, they're going to think you're strange." And he never told anybody about it. He never talked about it again until that day where he told me the story while he was working on the sink. So this happens. People see things, they don't get reported, and you say, "Well, why don't they talk about it?" You have a perfect job to talk about it. You are allowed to talk about it.
Right.
You're the host of a paranormal show. You can talk about it, but most people don't get to talk about it.
Right.
And I think that has become historically something that we have to deal with. And it goes back to the very questions you were mentioning at the beginning of this broadcast. We have managed to make this something that you have to keep inside. And yet these sightings, like yours, they're extreme, they're powerful, they're compelling, and yet we don't mention them. When I was doing After Disclosure, Stan Lee is a friend of mine, and I asked Stan for the blurb for the book, and he wrote a beautiful blurb, but he told me about one of the people that he had worked with at Marvel Comics coming back from Las Vegas, where a structural craft comes at his car, very close range, hovers in front of it. They stop the car, and then it slowly rises and flies off over his car. And this kind of stuff is not once in a lifetime. It's happening quite often. So I think we've got a problem, and we should probably think about it.
Well, and it's interesting that your plumber, this area, for the audience, the Wilshire corridor where we're talking about, this is not an area that doesn't have people that know how to report things.
Absolutely.
You have CBS, right?
You have so many people.
All of
there.
The radio stations up and down the corridor there. Television and production facilities, MGM, Fox Studios, all of this is in that general area. And then everybody that lives around it is in broadcast, is in media. And there are plenty of ways to report it if you wanted to report it, but it didn't get done.
Well, and this person's case was, I think, in the mid-60s. And clearly it was a different time in terms of, while it may be not a good thing to talk about it in a reporting point of view, I think, frankly, if that happened today, lots of people would be talking about it because everybody would have been snapping pictures on their phones and everybody would have gone back home and tweeted about it and talked about it. So we do have a slightly evolving way to look at these things. And because of our technology in our pockets, I think that we are moving toward a time where we will get that multiple sighting event where many people see it at the same time and it's recorded, and then we're going to have to talk about it. And I haven't seen too many of those events yet, but I think there have been some, and there'll be more. I mean, Phoenix in the 90s, a terrific example of it.
Well, I've often said, and I'm going to make this brief, I would like your comment, that we're totally ready for it.
Absolutely.
We're totally ready. If a flying saucer, if ET decided to land on the 405 at 5 p.m. in the afternoon, right?
Right.
In the Sepulveda Pass, if they decided to land there, we would freak out for about 15 minutes. But after that, the car horns are going to be blaring, and they're going to be saying, get that thing off the freeway.
Although, the one thing I would say about that, and I think you're right, Jimmy, but at the same time, it depends on the answer to a few questions. I think it boils down to three questions I always ask, which is, who are they, what do they want, and are we safe? And based on the answer to those questions, you're either going to freak out or you're not going to freak out. If in fact it was as benign as I've seen a UFO and then it flew off, that's
right.
One thing.
Right.
But it raises all these questions. You know, why are these people here? What do they want?
Peter LaVenda brought that up last night. He said, until we can say that we are safe, nobody is going to say anything in an official capacity. Our guest tonight, Bryce Abel, live in the studio. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. All right, welcome back. Has Britain's most baffling alien abduction UFO case involving a police officer finally been solved? Well, it was a cold morning in November 1980 that PC Alan Godfrey, who is now 70 years old, came face to face with a UFO. After that, he doesn't remember anything. Check out the full story in the news section over at coasttocoastam.com. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, live in the studio tonight. Bryce Zabel. I've got his new book, Once There Was a Way. What if the Beatles stayed together? We're going to talk about this and much more right after this short break. And we're going to get to your phone calls. This is Coast to Coast AM. All right, welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Bryce Abel's live with us in the studio. His new book is Once There Was a Way, What If the Beatles Stayed Together? Bryce,
yes,
what
sir.
What if the Beatles stayed together?
Well, then we would have had a lot of great music happening in that time. I mean, think about it. The Rolling Stones were contemporaries of the Beatles, and the Rolling Stones are still traveling right now. It's not impossible that we could have had another 50 years of Beatles music. So,
but the Stones went through the disco era.
Well, they did.
They turned disco. Would the Beatles have done disco?
Well, let's think about Paul McCartney in our timeline. I mean, McCartney experimented with most music types, and he did some songs that weren't exactly disco, but he was experimental and trying things out. I think the Beatles, almost anybody would tell you, would have continually tried to reinvent their form and done different music. That's my take. I mean, the book, though, is really about creating an alternate history, which is just another way of looking at the historical record. You can learn, you know, you learn different things from it. And I think I've used this alternate history about the Beatles to try to breathe life into a familiar story. I mean, if you think about it right now, we already know how the Beatles story ends. They go through Beatlemania, then they do the psychedelic part of it, and then they start falling apart. And in 1970, they fall off a cliff. And in terms of their characters, they break up. There is no more Beatles story at that point. There's four solo artists. And I think the Beatles, John, Paul, George, and Ringo, have become these iconic, familiar characters to us. We all kind of know them. We know who they are. They had these personalities that we get. I mean, John Lennon was the political angry guy, and McCartney was the commercial guy, and Harrison the spiritual one, and Ringo the fun guy.
Right.
We get them, but we didn't get any new stories from them, and we could have. So what I've tried to do with this alternate history is to give people another way to appreciate them and just to have some fun, because we all kind of wish that they'd stayed together. Think how great that would have been. The songs that we think of as solo songs now would have been Beatles songs, from McCartney's Band on the Run to Lennon's Imagine and Ringo's Photograph and Harrison's All Things Must Pass. These wouldn't have been solo songs. They would have been Beatles songs. And how great would that have been? They're already great songs, but in the hands of the four Beatles, they'd have been even better.
Did they have a political impact because they stayed together?
Yes. One of the things that I've tried to do with this alternate history is to make it feel very credible. This is not a time travel piece. There's
right.
nobody going back in time to keep the Beatles together.
Right.
I use the same device I did with the first book. It's called the Breakpoint series. And a breakpoint is that moment in history where things could have gone one way and they go another. So with Kennedy, the Kennedy assassination, which was the first book, instead of he doesn't get killed, so now we're off in this other world. It's a little more subtle with the Beatles. You don't have a he's dead or he's not dead kind of thing with the Beatles. But you do get a lot of, let me put it this way. What I've tried to do is look at it journalistically and tell that story. So the Beatles book, Once There Was a Way, is literally told from the point of view of a Rolling Stone kind of magazine, looking back on the Beatles and looking back on those years of maximum danger from 68 to 75, where they could have broken apart, but they didn't. And so the book sort of takes you through that alternate history. And I want to, by the way, can I just thank Coast fans, because they managed to turn this book into the number right now. I don't know what it is right now, but this afternoon it was the number 6 Beatles book on Amazon. And I owe it all to Coast fans, so thank you, folks.
Well, and thank you for writing it. But this is what I find interesting, is there are very few people or groups that can claim the changing of everything.
Right.
There is music before the Beatles, and then there is music after the Beatles. They changed music. Elvis did it. Led Zeppelin did it, you know, Van Halen. There's music before Van
sure.
Halen, music after. But you can almost count these influences on one hand.
But now here's the interesting twist on that. Kennedy, because he died, was a martyr, and therefore his story ended, and he was elevated. The Beatles, because they broke up, became mythical. But if Kennedy had lived, or if the Beatles had stayed together, they would have been mere mortals again, right? They would have been a rock and roll band, a world wonderful rock and roll band, but they would have still been, you know, making music, and they wouldn't have been sort of put up on that pedestal that we have them on. They'd have just been real people out making music. And so part of the fun of the book is to see how they would have weathered that storm and how their transition to being from being the biggest band ever to grace the planet to being one of the bands out there, and that's kind of interesting.
Well, what about the obvious, though? Back then in the 60s, it was, are you a Stones person or are you a Beatles person? Well, the Stones kind of won that. They stayed together.
They did stay together.
They stayed together. So if the Beatles didn't break up, that means this competition between the two bands continued. How did you address that in the book?
I do address that. I think that the Beatles and the Stones would have continued that. It's pretty much a friendly competition. And I think it's pretty obvious that they both would have had those moments where they were like, well, you ask how I address it in the book. One of the ways we look at it is that they might very well have had a competition to see who could stay together the longest. In other words, they might both have wanted to retire at a certain point, but the other guys keep going, so they keep going. I mean, there's a lot of things in the book that are fun like that, although I point out the book is not about the 50 years that they might have stayed together. It's about those 7 or 8 years where we remember all the tragedy of them falling apart. They were really not an effective group from 68 on. They had a lot of issues. They were making great freaking music during that time, but they were not together in a friendly way like we'd like to see them. So there's changes that would have happened. You can't write an alternate history. It's many people remember that Ray Bradbury movie, short story where someone steps on the butterfly. It's the butterfly effect, and
That's right.
Changes everything going forward.
Right.
Well, there'd be moments like that with the Beatles. And what I tried to do is dig up some of the things that just almost happened but didn't. I'll give you one great example. The Beatles almost, in our own timeline, almost starred in the Lord of the Rings movie.
What?
Most people don't know that, but John Lennon in the late 60s was interested in optioning Lord of the Rings and making the movie, and they almost made the movie with Stanley Kubrick. And the source for that is Paul McCartney.
Is that true?
It's true.
Did you vet that?
Yes. Paul McCartney said it to the director of Lord of the Rings. I'm blanking on his name right now. What's the...
The current director.
Yeah.
Peter Jackson.
Of course, Peter Jackson. McCartney told Peter Jackson that in 2002. Plus, I found sources of it in various books. So in the alternate history that I've written, they actually do make Lord of the Rings, and they make it with Stanley Kubrick, and they make it in 1971.
Let's. I wanted to bring up the whole Paul McCartney is dead thing.
Oh, boy.
We cannot not do that.
Let's do it.
So let's go to Ray in Winchester, Virginia. Who do you think Paul McCartney is there, Ray?
Billy Shears. Exactly who he'd tell you who he was. And listen, you know, I appreciate the chance to talk to you guys about this. I mean, I'm a truck driver and I just pulled off the road, but I've been waiting to tell somebody about this and wondering why people haven't put the pieces together. And what am I talking about? Well, look, a couple of Italian forensic scientists did a study, and they came into the study thinking they were going to put all this foolishness to rest.
Right.
Well, the results were they studied photographs from before 65, about 65, and after. They studied the vocal sounds of the fella before and after,
mm-hmm.
and that their definitive results were there's no way that surgery could make the changes in the facial structure. A couple of different places where the jawline. Are you,
right, and Ray, really quick, because I know you're driving a truck, and I want you to be safe.
Well, I understand that,
but so what you are suggesting, I don't want you to crash with what I'm about to say. So you are on the Paul is dead side of the fence.
Yeah, and there's other things, that other than that study came out when the night it was going to come out, Paul McCartney and Billy Shears was on the David Letterman show, and the next day he gave a free concert. But look, let me tell you, talk about some other things. A lady had a baby out with McCartney, and the lady was always said it was Paul McCartney that had the baby with. Well, that baby, the daughter, 6'35 or so, she's up there, and she's been trying to get McCartney to have it take a DNA test.
Right.
Well, it happened a number of years ago, and the DNA didn't match. But the person that signed the name had the wrong-handed signature. So yeah. One more thing then. And then Ringo Starr the other day, he says, I got to come out with this. I'm the last living guy. I don't want to, you know, it needs to be told. He said that you know, again, Paul McCartney died around 65 or something like that in a car accident. Everybody was all flustered. They took a guy that won the Paul McCartney lookalike contest, Billy Shears, and they brought him into the band thinking it would only go a week or so. Well, the guy was a good musician, and nobody seemed to notice, so they went along with it, but giving tips. Now, and the last thing I wanted to say is this. So after Ringo came out with his comment and Paul McCartney called him an old fool and doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, he's insane. Oh, no, he's going delirious.
Okay. Right, right.
So this daughter came back and said, okay, well, we're going to have to go after the real Paul McCartney's brother. I want to test his DNA against me and see how close it is. So that's all I got to say, Jimmy. But I appreciate your program, and I appreciate Bryce.
Yeah, and be safe out there. And you know how much I love truckers on this show. So be safe out there, Ray.
That's right. And today's Veterans Day. Everybody serves. And you know, that's right. Not just veterans. Everybody else is serving, too. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Ray. Bryce, what about that DNA test?
You know, I don't buy any of this. But on the other hand, you're talking to a guy who just wrote an entire book making up all this other stuff. So I may not be... It doesn't offend me as a story. I just don't think it really happened. I would look at, first of all, when Ringo Starr said what he said, he was kidding. He was joking. It was a big lark for Ringo. So, and also, the facts are that when this first was brought to the public's attention was in 1969 by a Milwaukee radio disc jockey who just made it up. And then it became one of the very first viral things that
sure
just went around the world,
right?
Because it was fun. And then people started finding these things, but there was never any truth to it. And in fact, I don't even know where to start. How do you prove the negative of this thing? This didn't happen. Paul, think of it this way.
Well, okay, wait. Let me jump in.
Okay.
I have an open mind. I know that you have an open mind.
Yeah.
It's like closing down the idea, and I'm suggesting that you're closing down on this, but what I want to say is this. It's like, did we go to the moon or not? The Apollo hoax, right?
Right.
Okay, I have an open mind about
well,
that.
Well, okay, but let me, I can't believe we're talking about this, but okay, but let me just put it this way.
You get what I'm
saying? If this guy is telling the truth and Paul McCartney died in 1965, that means in 1965, this incredibly talented musician who had written Yesterday and many of these other hits that were Beatles hits before 1965, and was clearly one of the best songwriters in world history at that point, already at that point, that he died, and not only did they find a guy that looked just like him, they found a guy who had the same insane level of songwriting talent to go continue writing these fantastic songs for all these years, and that nobody noticed. It just defies credibility. For me.
The mountain of evidence, you have to admit, if clever, the little pieces of evidence that are all over the floor, it's countless.
But it's not evidence. What it is it's people saying, oh my God, look, Paul doesn't have shoes on Abbey Road's cover.
He doesn't.
But what is that? How is that evidence of anything? That's what it's doing is taking the things that we see that are out there and imposing this theory, this McCartney
sure.
is dead conspiracy theory on top of them, whereas the more likely answer is Paul just didn't feel like wearing his shoes that day.
That on its own, Bryce, means nothing, that single album cover.
Right.
But then you've got the grave scene, the funeral on Sgt. Pepper. You've got all the little thing, you know, all the little things on the cover of that album that all add up. Again, not to list the 100 or 200 or 300 or 1,000 points of light here to you know, point this in one direction or the other. I don't need to go there. But the evidence is all over the place.
I just don't think any of it's evidence. What it is circumstantial incidents that we have found and imposed the order on. But it's not evidence. Evidence would be literally a DNA test that's replicable based on the dead McCartney's hair and this sham artist Paul McCartney who's faking
sure.
the whole world out right now.
Right, right. But it doesn't point at Ringo. It doesn't point at Paul. I mean, it doesn't point at John. It doesn't point at George. all of this evidence, everything that is there points at Paul. And that's all, it doesn't go in any other direction.
Well, as I said, you're talking to a guy that just wrote a book that made up 7 years of history and actually 50 years of history. So I'm not exactly, I don't want to be the journalism police here, but I don't think it's evidence. I think what it is just imposing our own prejudice on top of circumstance and going through album after album after album and saying, oh, now that I think McCartney is dead, now look at those shoes. Look at, I don't even remember all the myriad things that people have said over the years. But if you took another, I bet if we told your listeners that we suspect that you're not really Jimmy,
right,
and that somehow we've all been conned,
right,
that all of us working together, these millions of people who are out there listening right now, we could come up with a pretty convincing case that you are not who you say you are.
Well, okay, cat is out of the bag.
And I want you to prove it, because I think it's evidence that you're not Jimmy.
So that's how you addressed it in the alternative
I don't
history
actually
book.
Actually,
what I'm saying, hold on.
It is in the book, yeah.
What I'm saying is you, Paul is alive,
yes,
in your alternative history. Yeah,
and so is John.
So is John.
Yeah, because listen, you know, people ask me about when they say, "Well, you wrote this alternate history about the Beatles. So how do you deal with John's death?" Well, I don't, because in alternate history, the things at least my theory behind it is there's certain things I can't change. Cancer I can't change because that happened to the person. They actually had cancer. So George Harrison still dies when he dies, but that's not the case of John Lennon. John Lennon died because he was murdered, and say something had happened to the Beatles earlier in their career that caused them to worry about security, that would have kept John alive. There was a way to get into the Dakota without stopping, without protection and signing autographs. They could have driven straight in. So John lives in the book.
Well, I wanted to ask you 15 seconds,
sure,
before we hit the break. When does this end? What year? How far do you take the story?
I take it to 1975, and then there is a final interview with all four of the Beatles where they're talking about the rest of the story. So the chapters, 90% of the book is through 68 through 75, and the last 10% is this interview with the four remaining Beatles, which includes Eric Clapton, who sits in for George Harrison.
Our guest tonight, Bryce Abel, live in the studio. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back. Stay with us.